Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the ABN AMRO Analyst Call, third quarter 2012. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Friday the 16th of November, 2012, at 2:15 P.M. CET. I would now like to hand the conference over to your chairperson today, Mr. Jan van Wouter. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, or maybe good morning, dependent on the time zone you're in. Welcome to our investors and analyst call on ABN AMRO's nine-month results. I'm joined here today by Wietse Reehoorn, our CRO, Eric Bosmans, our Head of Treasury, and Mr. Dies Dohnke, our Head of Investor Relations. Together, we will discuss our interim results in greater detail with you. I would like to point out that we published a short investor call presentation on our website this morning, and during this call, we will be using this presentation. The full investors presentation will be published later today. Back to the presentation. Sometimes we will certainly move a little bit around the presentation, but turning to slide two, the nine-month underlying results 2012 was 1.201 billion, which is 22% higher compared to the same period in 2011. The underlying results, as you are probably all aware, exclude integration-related costs, and this allows for better comparisons of the results over time. Now, we consider these results to be satisfactory given the challenging economic environment. As was published yesterday, the Dutch economy contracted again in the third quarter after two quarters of marginal growth. This was because consumer spending was weak and the contribution of foreign trade was lower. The effects of the subdued economic environments are mainly reflected in an increase in impairment charges on our loan portfolio, excluding the Greek government-guaranteed government exposure, which we will discuss later during the call. The underlying cost-income ratio was 59% in the first nine months of 2012, which is an improvement of 4 percentage points on the same period last year. If I take you back to the year 2010, then we started with a cost-income ratio of 74%. As to this, we are quite well on track, I would say. I should note that the comparison is impacted by some large item in both year, and they are explained in the press release, and sometimes they will be mentioned during the call when necessary. The comparison with the 2011 figures is also impacted by a number of divestments made in the latter half of 2011. The main divestments were the Swiss banking, private banking activities, we mentioned this before, and the international division of commercial finance factoring business, both completed in October 2011. Touching briefly on the reported results, so including integration and integration-related expenses, the reported profits amounted to 1.045 billion, and this includes 156 million net of tax integration expenses. Important to say that the integration is on track, and we expect to finalize the client-related projects in 2012. We are nearly finished. We've nearly finished all the client-related integration projects as we had planned when starting the integration. To date, 1.4 billion in integration costs have occurred. Also as to that, we are well on track as we planned around 1.6 billion on integration costs after the full integration has been realized. A few words on the Q3 results. Operating income was 5% down, but operating expenses also fell by 5%, so operating results were slightly lower, actually down by 4%. Impairments were also much lower compared to the second quarter. There's a specific reason for that you have read in the press release. We sold a part of our Greek exposures and recouped a quite significant part of the impairment taken in 2011. Later on during the call, Wietse will elaborate on this. As a result, net profits in the third quarter increased by 10% to 374 million. Now, furthermore, in detail, and I'm moving to, let me see, slide three, I will discuss the P&L movements a little bit more in detail. Starting with net interest income, this declined by 1% year-on-year. Margins on savings remained under pressure despite less competition in the deposit market since, I would even say, the second quarter of 2012. Furthermore, funding costs increased due to a number of factors. First, the long-term debt, which matured, was issued at low spreads and was refinanced at higher spreads. This is especially true for capital instruments, and well, you have seen that we issued some capital instrument in the third quarter, also to be discussed further by Wietse. In addition, we lengthened the maturity profile of our long-term funding. At the same time, Commercial and Merchant Banking, C&NB, recorded higher interest income resulting from higher securities financing volumes and lending growth. Lending growth in Large Corporates and Merchant Banking, in Clearing, and to a lesser extent in Commercial Banking. Margin on mortgages and other consumer loans also increased. The quarter-on-quarter trend, by the way, was not much different from the year-on-year one. Moving to net fee and commission income. Net fee and commission income was impacted also by the divestments I mentioned earlier. Apart from the divestments, net fee and commission incomes also shows a decline, both quarter-on-quarter and compared to last year. Compared to last year, the decline, excluding divestment, was 9%. Persisting market uncertainty caused retail and private banking clients in particular to refrain from investing in securities, leading to lower transactions volumes. At the same time, however, there was a small increase in merchant banking in fee income because of the business growth within ECT and ECT, our energy, commodities, and transportation business. Slide four. Yes, slide four shows that the underlying operating expenses decreased by 12%. Excluding both the impact of divestments and the impact of 177 million restructuring charge taken in 2011 and some reclassifications, costs nearly remained unchanged. Though FTEs declined over and above staff reduction from divestments, this did not lead to a reduction in personnel costs because of the structural wage increases, such as the annual wage increase and the collective labor agreement wage increase, and furthermore, because of higher social security charges. Furthermore, we expanded our international franchise, leading to higher costs outside of the Netherlands because the integration and the reduction in FTEs is mainly in the Netherlands, whereas at the same time, we built up our offices in the USA and in Singapore and also strengthened the other activities as private banking internationally. The cost-income ratio for the third quarter was stable compared to Q2. And as I mentioned already, year to date, the cost-income ratio improved by 4 percentage points compared to the first 9 months last year. Impairment charges decreased by 23%, and all commercial segments reported higher impairments compared to the same period in 2011. The reason for the decline is that both 2012 and 2011 were severely impacted by changes in impairments for the Greek exposures. In the first 9 months of 2011, you will remember this, we recorded impairment charges on these exposures totaling 500 million. Whereas the sale of a part of these exposures in the third quarter this year, or the beginning of the fourth quarter, led to a release, net release of 125 million in the third quarter 2012. Now, if you adjust for the Greek exposures, it's clear that impairments have been on an upward trend in the past 7 quarters. And this also reflects the economic circumstances today, also in the Netherlands. Q3 shows a small dip compared to Q2, but we expect loan impairments to increase again in Q4. And Wietse will discuss the portfolio developments and the impairment charges more in detail later during this call. Now, this is about the result. I'll move to slide 5 for the balance sheet developments. and I will mainly focus on some of the most important items. Compared to year-end 2011, total assets grew by just under 26 billion to 430 billion. Now, half of the increase results from increased client activity in securities financing transactions. And again, half of this increase is because of rebuilding our franchise internationally. Loans and receivables customers, apart from the securities financing activities, loans and receivables customers increased by 7 billion, predominantly in merchant banking. And within merchant banking, predominantly within ECT, energy, commodities, transportation, and clearing business. The mortgage portfolio remained virtually stable at 155 billion. We have seen our market share increasing for new production as several competitors took a step back. And by the way, this also had a positive impact, of course, on the margins, on the interest margin we mentioned earlier. As to the deposits, total client deposits, again, excluding securities finance activities, grew over the first 9 months to 200 billion, which is an increase of 12 billion compared to year-end 2011. And of this increase of 12 billion, 4 billion stems from the third quarter. The increase in Q3 largely comes from retail and private banking, where Moneyou Germany remains successful in acquiring new deposits. Furthermore, growth was recorded both in private banking Netherlands and international. Interesting to mention that since past September, we started rolling out Moneyou in Belgium, which was well received by both the media and the clients. In general, client acquisition was successful and savings inflow was satisfying. Well, here ends my, brief explanation on results and the developments on the balance sheet, and I would like to hand over to Wietse to discuss capital, liquidity, loan impairments, and some other figures more in detail.
Jan, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning or good afternoon. Pleasure again that we're able to share the results of our fine bank with you. Let me take you to slide 7, capital. As stated before, we intend to further improve our total capital ratio ahead of the Basel III implementation. And to this effect, we issued an amount of 2.2 billion of lower Tier 2 capital in Q3 by means of a 1 billion placement with institutional investors early in July, followed by an US dollar 1.5 billion placement late in August with Asian and Swiss retail investors. In addition, we issued another Singapore dollars, 1 billion, actually that's in euros, 632 million, subordinated bond to institutional, retail and private banking clients, mainly in Singapore, in early October. We expect that all instruments issued will qualify as lower Tier 2 capital under the Basel III regulatory framework as lower Tier 2 capital. As to as these transactions demonstrates our strong market access and improved our geographical footprint. Furthermore, we have restructured an euro 1.65 billion subordinated note held by the Dutch state, which is now also expected to be eligible under the Basel III as lower Tier 2 capital. Although risk-weighted assets increased, just said transactions and the net profit generated further strengthened our capital position to a total capital ratio of 17.1%, up from 16.8% at the year end. Compared to end of June, the core Tier 1 ratio was 50 basis points lower. This decline was predominantly due to temporarily applying the standardized approach instead of the advanced approach to a part of the merchant banking loan portfolio, leading to an increase in this credit area bucket. And this is part of the, as you know, Basel II integration path we're executing at the moment within the bank. Slide 7 also gives you an impression of our current capital position under the Basel III phase-in approach, as expected per June 1st, 2013, as well as under the full phase-in rules. Let's say fully loaded Basel III rules with no transitional arrangements will bring our common equity Tier 1 at 9.2% today, applying the Basel III per gen to 13 rules, then we are at a 10.4 Common Equity Tier 1 position. Let me take you to slide 8 on liquidity. The liquidity buffer at the end of the third quarter was little over 58 billion. The buffer is virtually stable compared to year-end, but rose sharply from end of June. The increase is due to retained newly issued RMBS notes. Loan-to-deposit ratio improved further to 1.26, coming from 1.30 at year-end and 1.28 at end of June. This improvement was driven by a strong increase in client deposits, as explained in the balance sheet movements, thereby further reducing our dependency on the wholesale funding, thereby improving our risk profile. About the wholesale funding, slide 9, as stated last quarter, refinancing of all long-term wholesale funding maturing in this year was completed by April of this year. Up to the end of September, we issued a total amount of 14.1 billion in both secured and unsecured funding, excluding the earlier mentioned subordinated debt issues. Another 0.7 billion was issued in October, bringing the year-to-date issued funding to 14.8 billion. A couple of remarks on slide 11, on the portfolio, the credit portfolio. Well, as Jan also said in the introduction, the economic environment remained pretty challenging. Investments and consumer confidence were low, and the job market was under pressure. And these conditions affected almost all sectors where the bank is active in, but specifically, of course, the housing markets in the Netherlands, the commercial real estate sector, and SMEs. This is reflected in higher impairment charges and a 300 million increase in the total impaired portfolio in the third quarter, thereby leading in total to euro 9 billion. Year to date, the total impaired portfolio increased by almost 500 million. The impaired portfolio of commercial loans, and that is excluding securities financing transactions, increased by 400 million. The impaired ratio stands at the moment at 7.7%. Also, the past due ratio on commercial loans further improved actually in the third quarter due to tightened control of credit files. Asset quality in the longer term will depend on the plans of the newly formed government and their impact on the economy in general and on consumer confidence, purchasing power, and the unemployment rate in particular. This also will have a major impact on how mortgages perform. Let me say a couple of words on that, which is on slide 12. The housing market continued to decline during this quarter in terms of number of transactions after a temporary revival in May and June. Total volume of new mortgage production also continued to decline to 33 billion, which is more than 30% lower compared to the same period in 2011. Declining house prices led to an increase of the loan-to-market value of our mortgage portfolio, and actually that increased to 82% from 77% at year-end and 79% at the end of June. The increase in loan-to-market value also drove up impairment charges on mortgages in 2012. As a result, the impairment charges over total mortgage loan book increased to 13 basis points from 9 basis points in 2011, which is annualized. Despite these developments, the impaired ratio of the mortgage portfolio remained stable at 0.9%. Higher unemployment led to a modest decrease in the past due ratio on mortgages, which is now at 2.2%. The subdued housing market was caused in part by economic uncertainty and by uncertainty regarding the future tax treatment of mortgage interest. There has been some news in that respect by newly government plans to gradually bring down the tax deductibility of mortgage interest by 0.5% per annum to a maximum of 38%. These measures will affect both existing and new mortgages. Although we hope these measures will bring stability to the housing market, we expect house prices to decline by an average of 6% this year and by another 8% next year. And once these decreases have transpired, we expect the affordability for new home buyers to be at the long-term average and the house price correction to be largely behind us. And closing remark on the Greek government-guaranteed corporate exposures. Early October, we sold a tranche of these exposures, maturing actually in December, with a notional amount of $250 million to a professional counterparty. The reason was the uncertainty at that time also about the support package for Greece. And in line with IFRS guidelines, the release of the impairment charges on this tranche and the book loss on the transaction have been recorded in the 9th month results. And I said again, this resulted in a net release of impairment charges of $125 million. Early October, I said again, there was uncertainty around Greece. That was the reason behind this sale. Still, that uncertainty is there around the situation in Greece. Having said that, I will pass back now to Jan. Jan, it's for you now.
Okay, thank you, Richard. Well, a lot of numbers and amounts, but to summarize, 9 month results are satisfactory. Cost income ratio 59% means we are quite well on track. Adequate capital ratios on the Basel II and preparing for Basel III. Funding needs fulfilled for 2012 and a little bit of pre-financing 2013. Client integration almost completed and also will also be finalized before the end of the year. However, having said that, looking ahead to the fourth quarter, we do not foresee economic conditions improving and expect profit to be significantly lower. This is because the first quarter underlying result will include, and we mentioned that earlier, the full year charge for the bank tax, which means for ABN AMRO $112 million. $112 million to be included in cost and unfortunately net of tax because it is a tax or a levy. Furthermore, impairment charges will continue to be high and are traditionally high in the fourth quarter. Furthermore, also for the reported profit may be impacted by a provision for the integration of our two Dutch pension funds. However, at this point of time, it's not clear yet whether this will happen in 2012. Well, these are my concluding remarks. Thank you for your attention. First time we did this call by running through a presentation that was sent by you, so I hope this helps. I will hand over to the operator for the Q&A session. So, operator, up to you.
Thank you, sir. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. The first question comes from Hans Pluijgers. Please ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Hans Pluijgers. Three questions from my side. First, looking at the Greek exposure, you sold part in October because of uncertainty around that. How do you look at going forward? Do you expect more deals on that side and maybe some releases on from that exposure? Be a little deliberate on what your stance there is. Secondly, you already indicated that you see impairment charges trending up in Q4. If I make a quick calculation on the mortgage side, it's about between 16 and 18 basis points in Q3. What do you expect there going forward with respect to mortgage? What do you think is the level that we gradually could grow to in impairments? And the same, a little bit on, could you elaborate on what you see in the SME sector? Of course, it has been already trending up. Do you see any lights at the end of the tunnel, or do you say, well, it's far, far too early? And the last question is on the NIM. Of course, since over the last few months, deposit rates has come down. Do you expect any impact, and could you give maybe some feeling on what you see on the NIM trend going forward?
Okay, well, four questions, which that's three of the four offer you.
That's okay, it's fine. Yeah, sure. Yeah, as to the Greece exposures, as explained, I mean, we sold the in December maturing part because there was a momentum in the market to do so. Question, of course, will be there such a moment in the future again? We don't know, of course. As said again, there's remaining uncertainty around the supporting packages to Greece. So we'll have to see, and if there is a moment in time where we are able to have a good deal on our side, we may do it again, but we don't know at this moment. As to the impairments on mortgages, what we have said is that indeed on an annualized basis in Q3, the impairments are around 70 basis points. We expect 17 basis points, of course.
Yep.
We expect in the fourth quarter that to be higher, actually. And where it finally will end, we don't know. But it has, of course, to be said that in the portfolio, increasingly there are increasing LGDs, PDs who are, let's say, reflecting the higher risk. Still, I would consider the loss data around the mortgage portfolio on an acceptable level, showing still there is low risk in the portfolio, but we do see an increasing trend there. As to SME, in this quarter we have seen, and we report SME in the commercial banking segment, as you know, we have SME and corporate clients there. We have seen this quarter that the SME impairments have been higher compared to the fact that the corporate clients' impairments have declined. What we do expect is that on the SME side, also in the fourth quarter and going forward, the impairments remain elevated at that high level.
Okay.
Jan, I think the other question was for you.
Yeah, okay. The other question about the deposit rates. Well, indeed, as I mentioned, only as from the second quarter, we've seen deposit rates coming down only slightly. It's clear that this is a highly competitive market. All banks still try to increase their clients' funding to become less dependent on wholesale funding. So that means that in our view, a decrease in deposit rates, which you would expect normally, will only take place very, very gradually. And very often, still frequently, you see all kind of actions from certain banks to increase their rates. So we expect a very slow down of the deposit rates.
But looking at, let's say, because of course also part of your big part of your deposits are also term deposits, could you give maybe some feeling what the normal delay in, let's say, in seeing the impact of a decline in deposit rates? Because it seems already for a few months now, but as you say, the impact is limited, but partly I think explained by that you have still also a big part term deposits. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. That's apart from term deposits, so there will be a certain delay, of course. But more important is that the competition in this market is still very high. So banks will continue to offer high rates. That's the most important factor.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Is there a next question?
The next question comes from Lee Street. Please ask your question.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for holding the call. This is Lee Street from Morgan Stanley. I have three questions for you, please. Firstly, you've obviously successfully issued quite a lot of lower tier 2 debt this year. Can you give us any guidance in terms of what percentage total capital ratio you're targeting, or whether you're targeting a specific percentage of total liabilities in subordinated debt? Secondly, really as a follow-on from the previous questions, are you able to give any indication, based on your modelling, where you'd expect impairments as a whole to actually peak? You know, are you thinking this is going to be early next year, mid next year, or even the year after? And finally, from your release, I believe you say you have 9.5 billion of commercial real estate exposure in terms of an exposure at default. Do you have to give any details in terms of what the non-performing loans are on that and what coverage ratios there are against those exposures? That'll be all. Thank you.
Okay, the line was a little bit difficult to hear, to understand. But for the first question, Eric, you take it?
The capital ratios.
You take the other two? Okay, thank you. Yeah.
The capital ratios, let's say, as outlined on page number nine of, sorry, number. The good capital base with large equity component. There you see at the lower end what we expect the capital situation to be if Basel III would be fully phased in. If you look at the three different bars, then currently we are at 17.1. This goes all the way to 14.9 in January 2013, and fully phased in, we would end up with 13.9. Obviously, we will do our utmost to respect the levels Basel III expects us to be further down the road, and we take our time. What I can tell you is that the bulk of lower Tier 2 has been issued this year, and that we will continue to issue to a lesser extent next year, and that the focus next year will clearly be on Tier 1 and not on Tier 2. Is that an answer to your question?
Yeah, that's a fair answer. That is, that's why I presumably be waiting for Tier 1 in terms of getting the final version of CRD4 first, though.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me answer your other question as to real estate. Real estate, just to be very clear there, it's both commercial real estate and real estate for clients' own use, which we have in the portfolio. Exposure at default almost 10 billion. The ratio of impaired exposure over EAD increased to 6.7% at the half year 2012 from 5.3% at year-end. That is the figure I can give you here. As to your question, which is a very difficult question, as to the outlook on, let's say, where the peak of the impairment levels would be for the bank as a whole. Let's say the outlook we have actually is that in terms of the impairments for mortgages, the impairments for real estate and the impairments for SME, we still expect that we will see some higher levels. Again, where the peak will be reached, well, we of course do hope it will be at least next year at the latest. Again, it's very difficult to predict it given the severe market circumstances at this moment also in the Netherlands. You may have seen what came out in terms of contraction of the economy yesterday also in the Netherlands.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. That is very helpful. Can I ask one quick follow-up, if I may? Obviously, you referenced that you've done the bulk of your subordinated lower Tier 2 issuance this year, and next year the focus will turn to Tier 1 securities. Obviously, with that in mind in terms of marketing them, how do you go around thinking about your approach to the calls that remain on your current outstanding securities in terms of that impacting your ability to issue going forward?
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
Obviously, when it comes to calling existing instruments, we always weigh our options, where our policy is to clearly call if possible. What you can take away from this meeting is that we will continue to respect this policy, and if circumstances allow us, that we will obviously call the outstanding instruments.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you very much for answering questions so clearly.
Okay. Thank you. Is there another question?
The next question comes from Heini Hacker. Please ask your question.
Yeah. Hi, good afternoon. I had a few questions. First of all, I'm still struggling a bit with your risk-weighted asset dynamics because so many things are mixed there. First of all, your market risk-weighted assets almost double. I was wondering if you could give some color there. In the press release, it's a bit unclear. You say that it is pending the transition from the standardized to the advanced approach, but if both the year-end and the 11 and 12 are on standardized approach, there's simply a clear increase. I was just wondering where that is coming from.
Yeah.
Equally so, because your risk-weighted assets grow faster than both your balance sheet and your loan book, whereas you're also referring to the fact that, and maybe you can also explain that you have a release of 6 billion from the completion of the separation and integration activities. I'm trying to get a bit of a feel to what extent, both in terms of market risk, but maybe also in terms of credit risk on a like-for-like basis, you have become more riskier because you alluded that the growth in your lending book was primarily in merchant banking and in commercial banking. So I assume that that has a higher risk weighting. So that is maybe one question. My other question relates to the mortgage book. Because of declining house prices, your average LTV is clearly increasing, but I guess also the mortgages with very high LTV. So I'm talking over 80%. But so if I do quickly the sums, you have 19% of your loans over 100% and 37% of the book over 80%, which is a bit of a dangerous mix, of course, in a market where house prices are falling rapidly and where the economy and unemployment is deteriorating. So what could that potentially mean to your, indeed to your, for example, your loss given defaults, where you were already referring to that they are increasing?
Okay. Thank you for the questions. Understandable questions. As to the risk-weighted assets picture, that I mean, those are indeed, and I can imagine the question. They are somewhat difficult to understand because I mean we have two movements here. Actually, it's of course first a movement which is a reflection of let's say the asset quality of the portfolios, but foremost actually there are movements being caused by the fact that we are still in an integration mode of our Basel II models. As you know, the bank has been formed out of two banks in 2010, and we have always said that the integration will end of this year. Jan also explained it in terms of results, etc. However, the Basel II integration path is quite complicated. You have to integrate models from both banks. That led us to certain temporary measurements also in consultation with the Dutch Central Bank. For example, on credit risk, a large part of the increase in risk-weighted assets is caused by the fact that for the large corporates, that portfolio is put temporarily on standardized. At the moment when the new model we are working on and have, let's say, put for approval with the Dutch Central Bank, at the moment that is being approved, then we expect that we broadly can fall back again on advanced, which has an impact, of course, on lower areas in that side. On the operational risk side, the same story is here applicable. We are moving there from standardized AMA operational risk path to the advanced, and I have to correct myself here, to the advanced situation in mid next year. So that explains a increase in the risk-weighted assets on that side. On the market risk side, actually, we have exactly the same situation. In order to reach there also the advanced, which we call the IMM phase, we are also confronted there with an important model which we have not continued. So we have been able, and actually we have been necessitated actually there to put it on standardized. So again, there, that is a volatility in the risk-weighted assets figures, which do not fully reflect the underlying risks. I could imagine that this is not, let's say, a very clear answer to you, but I have to be very precise here that there are two trends who are affecting each other. The other point as to the mortgage LTVs. It is true that the bucket has increased larger than the 110% from 8% to 11%. That's true. On the other hand, there's a decline of the 100 and 110%, and that decline was from 9% to 8%. And as a matter of fact, I think it's important to mention that in terms of a too high loan to value of the mortgage portfolio, and especially where, let's say, the loan-to-value is higher than the value itself, of course, that causes problems at the moment when, for example, as a result of unemployment, defaults, whatever you have, we need to to end a relationship there. However, that is not the situation at the moment, so we still feel comfortable there. Of course, it is true that by increased paydays and LGDs, we face some higher, now not only impact on the portfolio, but also risk-weighted assets. Jan, over to you.
Oh, there were two questions, so.
Oh, sorry. I thought we had a third question.
No.
May I ask them for a clarification, because the risk-weighted asset situation is a bit fluid, because you switch from, quite contrary to other banks, from advanced to back to standardized, and then you hope to move back to advanced again, if I understand your story correctly. But if you are talking about fully phased Basel III ratios, does that incorporate the transition to the advanced approach as envisaged by you, or how should I read that? Because it makes these capital ratios also otherwise quite volatile.
Well, actually, that does not, because, I mean, that's being based on exactly the position as we are today. And again, I mean, in terms of the Basel to advanced position, in terms of credit risk, actually, the full risk-weighted assets calculation is on that basis. Don't forget that, actually. And I'm only explaining to you that temporarily there are some model integrations necessary. We're working on that. But again, the expectation there is that we will arrive at advanced. But again, the Basel III phased-in ratios are based on the position of today, i.e., also on the basis of risk-weighted assets as of today.
What would be the impact then if you were to move to advanced for the portfolios where you are working on to get to advanced, such as the large corporate portfolio, but also your market and your operational risk?
You may expect that for the large corporates portfolio, we will see a decrease of risk-weighted assets again. In terms of market risk, partly you will see a decrease, but partly you will also see an increase as a result, as from Jan 1st, as a result of a couple of what we call the Basel 2.5 impacts there. In terms of operational risk, it's, I think, too early to say about what will be exactly the effect there of the AMA compliance.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there another question? I think it's around.
There is a follow-up question from Hans Pluijgers. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. One question with respect to the discussions with the central bank, the DNB, on the local SIFI surcharge. Do you have any indication when they can give the full clarity on that? What are your feelings going, which direction is the current discussion going? Could you give some update there?
Well, there's no news yet, so we expect still, or by the end of the year, beginning next year, what we said earlier, that it will be between 1% and 3% is still valid, but the exact percentage has not been announced to ABN AMRO yet.
What's the, let's say, the main reason they do not have not come yet, do you believe? Is that purely that's no clarity on the CRD4, or they're waiting for other regulators to come with clarity?
No, I think that they are waiting for all the banks, by the way, for the so-called ECAP calculation. So our expectation is to the capital ratio for next year, and then they will come up, I think, with that charge. So no specific reason. It's not only for ABN AMRO, it's for most banks, apart from those banks that are in global CV, I think. But we expect them in a couple of weeks, I assume.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, pleasure. Is there one final question yet?
The next question comes from Gildas Suri. Please ask your question.
Hey, thank you very much. Gildas Suri from Citi. Two questions on your debt instruments. The first one on your lower tier 2 held by the state. Can you please give a bit more details about the way it was restructured? In particular, did you extend the maturity, modify the coupon, or remove the calls? And if you can answer, was the regulator involved? And the second question on your Tier 1, we are seeing CRD4 coming up for the course of the next weeks, but the bail-in directive, would your Tier 1 contribute to the bail-inable buffer of the bail-in directive as and when it will be implemented, most likely in January 2015. Thank you.
Okay, start first with restructuring.
Yeah, let's start with the restructuring. For the sake of time, I will give you a short but clear answer. We restructured it by removing the step up, and the state, the Ministry of Finance, was fully involved in, let's say, this restructuring. And on the second question, with respect to the fact whether the Tier 1 is bail-inable, yes or no, it's depending on what the final outcome will be with respect to what is bail-inable, yes or no. So, unfortunately, I cannot give you the answer.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
Okay, is there one more question?
The next question is from James Hyde. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is a question about the liquidity buffer and LCR. I see that compared to the first half or end of June, you've increased the liquidity buffer again, but it seems that a lot of that, would I be right in assuming that is largely in the form of securities that would not qualify for LCR recognition? And I was wondering, does that imply that you guys expect this LCR to be a lot more flexible than it seems now, and that's why you're increasing the liquid asset buffer in these securities?
Let's say for two reasons that the liquidity buffer has risen compared to the first half of this year. It's, let's say, the deposits inflow and the fact that some RMBSs came back. We have reissued them and they are now part of the retained part of the portfolio of the liquidity buffer. In total, this was close to 6 billion. And the fact whether the LCR will, or sorry, the RMBS will not or yes be eligible is to be determined at earliest by summer next year. And we obviously start already to anticipate the fact that RMBSs would not be eligible by shipping in extra cash. So that's, I think, the answer I can give you on this question.
Thank you. Fair enough. Thank you.
Okay. So, well, we are a little bit running out of time. It's very clear that for next time we should reserve at least 1 hour again. So, so I would like to ask if there is one final question and then suggest that for further questions you send them to Investor Relations, to Dees Dunker, who's happy to answer them. So is there one final question?
There is one final question from Thiago Parente. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, very quickly, thanks for taking the question. Could you sort of give any indication about the government's intentions regarding an exit strategy for ABN? I appreciate it's obviously the shareholders' decision, but presumably you would have spoken to the government regarding the calendar and potential alternatives, and any color you could give on that front would be much appreciated.
Okay, well, good question. Well, Richie,
can you
take them both? No,
well, actually, the position has not changed from what we have said earlier. As you know, that at the moment this bank has been nationalized. Also, the Ministry of Finance was quite clear in the message that at the earliest, in his opinion, in 2014, the bank could become private again. The recent government has issued also some statements around this issue, repeated actually what has been said in the past, but also said, well, of course, the markets should be there. But of course, everybody understands that. What already has been said in 2010 actually is that different options could be looked upon. So not only an IPO, but also other options. Well, the position is still there, also the same. And the expectation in that sense is again the same as from the earliest 2014. But given where the markets are today, that seems to be somewhat at the earlier side.
Is the government still insisting on the recouping the investment that the Dutch taxpayer put in the bank, or is that sort of hurdle overcome? I.e., could the bank be listed even though the valuation doesn't reach those levels?
Well, there's still, of course, an desire that as much as possible can be recouped. That having said that, One should also be realistic. And again, I think we better should ask this, the shareholder, what exactly the position is they want to take. It has been announced that in the beginning of next year there will be some advice from what is current the shareholder, NLFI, in terms of different exit strategies and perhaps also different exit momentums. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Thank you for your good question. And really, if there are more questions, please send them to our Investor Relations Department. I would like to wish you all a very good weekend, and well, hope to hear or see you at one of our next meetings. Thank you very much.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may all disconnect.